1 Corinthians chapter 9 here tonight as we're going to look at the Apostle Paul's own example of following the principle that was laid out in chapter 8. There, I won't go into the review of that. It would take a few minutes to talk about that, but how the reality of what they were facing about meat offered to idols and then actually partaking of that meat in some of the dining rooms that were connected there with the temple and the potential harm that that could be to those who were newer in the faith, and just the fact that it could actually be an injury to even the world around. And so he said, even though we know that meat doesn't mean in itself is not a spiritual matter, he says, as he finishes out chapter 8, verse 11, and through thy knowledge shall the weak brother perish for whom Christ died. But when ye sin so against the brethren and wound their weak conscience, ye sin against Christ. Very strong admonition not to hurt someone. Wherefore, if meat make my brother to offend, I will eat no flesh while the world standeth, lest I make my brother to offend. So very strong verses in regard to our care for others. And so in chapter 9, he's going to lay out a right that he put aside because he did not want to be a stumbling block since he was the pioneer apostle to the Gentiles. Especially here in Corinth, he did not want to be misunderstood, but he had a certain right that he could have claimed, privilege that he could have taken, and he was not going to do it. Morris says, Paul has been dealing with the strong who asserted their rights, that's back in chapter 8, even when that harmed others. He has told them that this is wrong. He now proceeds to show that he himself has consistently applied this principle. And so it's very interesting. We're going to see his willingness to give up what was really his right. But in doing so, we do get some instructions on something that we don't often talk about. Certainly a pastor doesn't normally talk about it. And that is proper care of leadership. Speaking of finances. So again, this is not the topic I would have normally chosen to speak on, but I'm going to be faithful in my exposition. But you know, it is important to understand how the Lord does accomplish his work. And so in the Apostle Paul, clearly laying out he had the right to be supported, he then says, I'm going to lay that aside because I don't want to be misunderstood that I'm doing anything for gain in this matter of being the apostle and what I am doing for the Lord. So let me read these first few verses. We're going to go through about half of the chapter, starting in verse 1. Am I not an apostle? Am I not free? Have I not seen Jesus Christ our Lord? Are not ye my work in the Lord? If I be not an apostle unto others, yet doubtless I am to you, for the seal of mine apostleship are ye in the Lord. Mine answer to them that do examine me is this, have we not power to eat and to drink? Have we not power to lead about a sister, a wife, as well as other apostles, as the brethren of the Lord and Cephas? Or I only and Barnabas, have we not power to forbear working? Who goeth at warfare any time at his own charges? Who planteth a vineyard and eateth not of the fruit thereof? Or who feedeth a flock and eateth not of the milk of the flock? Say I these things as a man, or saith not the law the same also? For it is written in the law of Moses, thou shalt not muzzle the mouth of the ox that treadeth out the corn. Doth God take care for oxen? Or saith he altogether, for our sakes no doubt this is written, that he that ploweth should plow in hope, and he that thresheth in hope should be partaker of his hope. If we have sown unto you spiritual things, is it a great thing if we reap your carnal things? If others be partakers of this power over you, are not we rather? Nevertheless, we have not used this power, but suffer all things, lest we should hinder the gospel of Christ. Do you not know that they which minister about holy things live of the things of the temple? And they which wait at the altar are partakers with the altar. Even so, the Lord ordained that they which preach the gospel should live of the gospel. All right, this section we'll look at here, and so you have the teaching on And Paul is making it very clear to him that when he says what he says in chapter 8, he's living it out in chapter 9. And he had to really walk by faith, especially with the Corinthians. And we'll see a little bit later that other churches did support him. But he had not wanted there to be any hold that they could have on him in this regard. And yet, in the whole process of this, he makes quite an exposition and a very strong teaching on the fact that those that are leadership in the gospel, in the work of the Lord, should be supported in that regard. So let's just go quickly through this section here. It's based upon gifting. Here he's making it clear, because he is an apostle, he has this right. In fact, in a particular way, he had the right. Now, he was quite the apostle. He was on the cutting edge of what was being done. Sort of reminds me that no one ever climbed Mount Everest until Sir Edmund Hillary achieved the feat in 1953. Since then, hundreds have ascended this highest and most forbidding peak. But somebody had to be the first. And the Apostle Paul was really the pioneer in spreading Christianity, starting the churches in the Gentile realm. And so he's fairly forthright here about what God had called him to do. He was very clear that it's by the grace of God he was what he was, but he was called. And so he states that very clearly. He asks a series of questions here. Paul defends his apostleship. Am I not an apostle? Nobody could argue about that. And then he says, am I not free? Do I not have the right to these things? Have I not seen Jesus Christ, our Lord? He had a face-to-face encounter with the Lord on the road to Damascus, and then also he was transported into the presence of the Lord, clearly in the time that on the backside of the desert when God was working with him. We don't know all of the ins and outs. We have different aspects of that taught. And so he had seen the Lord. And then, are ye not my work in the Lord? And so you have these questions are all to be answered with a yes. So there's no doubt that he was gifted and called to be an apostle. And so those in leadership ministry in particular are clearly seen within the local church as gifted to do what they are called to do. You have the evangelist, the pastor teacher, you have teachers and others that God gives to the work of the ministry. And here he was an apostle. And so clearly these who are called have these privileges given to them. And so that's the second thing I want us to see based upon the gifting. Paul's rights here were delineated. We read in verse 2, if I be not an apostle unto others, yet doubtless I am to you, for the seal of mine apostleship are ye in the Lord. He's making that very clear, that if there's any doubt that he's an apostle, just look at what God had done in Corinth. And he says, mine answer to them that do examine me is this. In other words, are questioning why I'm doing what I'm doing or not what I'm doing. He's saying here, and he again starts asking some questions, have we not power to eat and to drink? Now, this is actually, he's defending here the right that he had to be taken care of so that he could have the provision. He's basically saying, as a servant of God, not to mention an apostle, don't I have the right to expect that at least food and drink will be provided for me? There's a little bit of divine sarcasm in some of this here. I mean, that's the basic of what you do for anybody. But he said, am I not an apostle? By the way, there was a problem in the Corinthian church. Have you caught that a little bit? A lot of carnality, a lot of pride, a lot of cultural aspects had come into the church, and yet God was doing some good things despite that, and he was dealing with all of that. But He said, I have the right to be taken care of so that I have the necessities to be able to live. Have we not power to lead about a sister, a wife, as well as other apostles and as the brethren of the Lord and Cephas? He said, is it not only should I be able to be supported, but my wife should be able to be supported. Now, he must have had a wife at some time, being part of the Sanhedrin. That was part of being part of the Sanhedrin. And so must have lost his wife. And in God's providence, he was able to travel unhindered without that because of the kind of ministry that he had. But he's saying, you know, it is right for not only for the man, but for the wife to be supported, which is very important in the ministry and even in a traveling ministry. And so it's important as much as possible to keep the spiritual leader with his wife and that there is support in that regard in whatever endeavor they're part of. And evidently they had supported the brethren of the Lord. They had supported Cephas. And by the way, sorry about this, but Cephas had a wife. Who's Cephas? Peter. That sort of contradicts some theology that I know. All right. Anyway, we won't go any further with that. But this is another one of those passages there. And clearly, in travels and in establishing churches, both the husband and wife were taken care of. And so he said, if I wanted to marry a Christian woman and have her minister with me, that would be my right. Or I only and Barnabas, have we not the power to forbear working? I mean, when you think of our position and what we did, doesn't it seem reasonable that we shouldn't have to do like the tent making and all of that, but to be able to give ourselves to the gospel? And the answer again is yes. Well, obviously. But see, he chose not to do it. And so it's just very interesting. This is a very personal, unique passage here, but under inspiration. And so Paul and Barnabas had as much a right as others to get their livelihood from the ministry without having to work on the side. So let me say, first of all, when it comes to those who receive support from a church, the obvious gifting and calling of God should be there. And so he's clearly making that a case, and that what you're really doing is giving toward the work of the Lord by enabling those in leadership positions to be able to function fully, and their wives and their families. And so you're talking about full consideration of all the needs that are being met. And it is, this verse is one that is very important. 1 Timothy 5:17, let the elders that rule well be counted worthy of double honor, especially they who labor in the word and doctrine. For the scripture saith, thou shalt not muzzle the ox that treadeth out the corn, and the laborer is worthy of his reward. And so there should be an appropriate and a proper taking care of those that are functioning in the will of God and in an effective manner. All right, number two, this was understood as customary. If you look at verse 7, who goeth a warfare anytime at his own charges? Who planteth a vineyard and eateth not the fruit thereof? Or who feedeth a flock and eateth not the milk of the flock? Say I these things as a man? He said it's just understood as customary when someone does the work and they are benefiting you. You don't expect, for instance, you have the example of a soldier. Soldiers do not fight during the day and then work at a civilian job at night so they can eat and buy clothes and have a place to stay. You're not going to have much of an army if you do that. And so leadership within any given ministry, and those that are in the traveling ministry as they're giving themselves to the work of the Lord, the whole point is that they can be as effective as possible to be used of the Lord that way. Some years back, a magazine that is for pastors took an in-depth look at the work of different pastors representing different sized churches and different places from rural to urban. And so their conclusion was that pastors work 7 days a week. often for 9 hours a day. The average work week was 53.7 hours. That was just 2 hours less than the average week put in by chief executives of top corporations. The average salaries of the executives at that time was about $200,000 a year, and a few years back, the average pastoral stipend was about $10,000. And this has been, it's been unique over the last several decades as to knowing the appropriate amount to be able to give, but it is the idea of a soldier needs to be able to fully fight. The person who is serving the Lord ought to be able to fully function. And yet, let me say on the other side, no pastor, no evangelist, no full-time servant of the Lord should ever do what they do for money. Our dear founding pastor here sacrificed the first few years, got very little. And we're here today because he wasn't worried about money. Aren't you thankful for that? I say this carefully. I use this as an illustration for preacher boys, but when I never asked what my salary was going to be here at Falls Baptist Church. And when I came, the salary was still more on that level than it was typical for the church. And I was an assistant pastor, and I took a huge cut to come as the senior pastor when I finally got here and found out. But you know, it didn't bother me a bit. My God will supply all our needs according to his riches in Christ Jesus. And I tell you, the church has just been abundantly above in their care for me. But what I'm saying is, on the other side, gentlemen, going to the ministry, yes, churches and ministries ought to support those that God has called, but you're not in it for the money, and God help you if you ever think about that. And so the church needs to do right, but the pastor needs to do right. And there needs to be a proper balance in leadership, and you don't worry about it. And we got a God that just takes care of everything. But from the church side, you know, you want your soldiers to lead, don't you? You want them to, and then you got the example of the farmer. As 2 Timothy 2:6 says, the husbandman that laboreth must be first partaker of the fruits. Farmers don't plant a vineyard or cultivate a crop for someone without being paid or getting the remuneration themselves. They live off of that. That's how they live. That's how they survive, obviously. And so those that are working in the ministry have the privilege. It's God's plan, both Old and New Testament, for them to live according to the blessing that comes through the ministry. This is really fun to preach about, you know. I'm being true to the word, doing my best here, okay. And number three, it's prescribed in God's law. We read in verse 8, so say I these things as a man, or saith not the law the same? Well, this isn't my idea. This is God's idea. This is Old and New Testament. For it is written in the law of Moses, thou shalt not muzzle the mouth of the ox that treadeth out the corn. Doth God take care for oxen? And that's the same what we read in 1 Timothy chapter 5. And so this is reiterated again here in 1 Corinthians chapter 9. And so the law made it very clear that this wasn't just a human principle. This was a divine principle. And this was from Deuteronomy 25:4, and it was speaking of the principle of those that labored in the temple should be taken care of. In the New Testament, those within the church. And let me just make a comment here. He says, you don't muzzle the mouth of an ox. And it's not saying here, doth God take care for oxen? In other words, he's really caring about oxen. Actually, he's saying he doesn't really worry too much about the oxen. But still, it's only right that an ox eats, as he's doing the threshing work, he can eat of what he is threshing. And the Lord, that's not that big a deal to the Lord. But it is a big deal that you take care of God's servants. Verse 10, or saith he all it altogether for our sakes? For our sakes, no doubt. This is written that he that ploweth should plow in hope, and he that thresheth in hope should be partaker of his hope. And so he says, if we have sown unto you spiritual things, is it a great thing if we reap your carnal things? Pretty straightforward there. Now, let me just make a couple of comments here. If we do not have a respect in taking care of missionaries, evangelists, pastors, or whatever, and if we somehow just think that is sort of a lower area of how folks should be taken care of, do you think that may cause there to be an attitude issue on our part about wanting our children to be in the ministry? You see, if we're chintzy on that, then we don't see that as a very high vocation and calling. Do you follow me on that? And so, again, no one that's a servant of the Lord is in it for money, and God help them if they are. But the fact is that we have today a premium put on a professional career of young people that are trained in the local church to serve the Lord and have had all kinds of opportunities. And yet there is sort of a, well, you don't make as much, and it's, you know, it is a lot of work and so forth. And we miss the whole point. The point is we want to see men in the ministry, and of course ladies in full-time service that are giving themselves to the Lord and doing it excellent in an excellent fashion and accomplishing a great work for God, and that if God's called them, that is a great calling, and that they should be taken care of in proportion to that, and that it ought to not be seen as just sort of a lower level. So again, it's a unique thing for me to maybe say, but I think it's a big deal. And I tell you, in churches that do right by their staff and there is a proper view toward the ministry, then a lot of the young people go into the ministry. If it's not that way, then many don't. And a lot of it's the attitude that we have. Now, God doesn't call every young person into full-time leadership ministry, but God calls every young person into the ministry. They should be full-time servants of the Lord, whether they are leadership ministry or they are supporting their ministry through through some kind of vocation. But that's so important. Listen, there is such a need today, and parents, let me just say that if God has called your children, don't discourage them from it. I can guarantee you that most young people brought up in a church and then trained in a church in the things of God, God's going to want to put them in strategic places. It just makes sense. So I would encourage you to think about that. So there's an interesting application. The Lord really laid that in my heart as I was going through this. Let me quickly finish this. There's an established precedent that is noted here in verse 12. If others be partakers of this power over you, are not we rather? So he says the procedure is already used for leaders. They were already supporting their pastor. They were already supporting others. They had taken care of Peter, evidently. They had taken care of Apollos. They were already doing it. And yet, when he came, what did he do? He made tents. And he says, he made it clear that he was... Not going to do anything that would discredit the ministry here. But he, in other places, like in Philippians chapter 4, we read in verse 10, but I rejoiced in the Lord greatly that now at the last your care of me has flourished again, wherein you were also careful, but ye lacked opportunity. You were anxious about it. And so the Philippian church supported Paul. Many of the other churches supported Paul. But in Corinth, he did not exercise that right for whatever the reasons were in that church. But he had every right to do it as an apostle. And so they'd already done it. And so there shouldn't have been any attitude. There was evidently an attitude about not supporting him. And this procedure was already universally accepted. Let me finish verse 12. Nevertheless, we have not used this power. In other words, we have this right, but we have not used this power, but suffer all things lest we should hinder the gospel of Christ. The Apostle Paul really meant it. I'm not going to do anything that's going to be a stumbling block to others. This was the whole point of following up from chapter 8. And then in verse 13, this procedure universally accepted with the Old Testament, do ye not know that they which minister about holy things live of the things of the temple, and they which wait at the altar are partakers with the altar? This was the Old Testament principle. It even goes before the law, Genesis 14, 18, and Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought forth bread and wine, and he was the priest of the Most High God. And he blessed him and said, blessed be Abraham of the Most High God, possessor of heaven and earth, and blessed be the Most High God, which hath delivered thine enemies into thy hands. And what did Abraham do? He gave them him tithes of all. So right from even pre-law, there was a taking care of those that were doing the work of the ministry. And of course, you had the whole Levitical law given there in the Pentateuch about how the sacrifices and how the tithes were given for the taking care of the priests and of the Levites. And so this was something that they already knew. It was something that was very much an accepted practice. But here's probably, well, this is the most important. And I actually had never seen this before until I studied this. Verse 14, even so hath the Lord ordained that they which preach the gospel should live of the gospel. He's referring to Jesus Christ. This was the plan Christ laid down. That's what it says. Jesus ordained that this is the way it should be. And boy, that sort of settles it right there. Jesus said that they which preach the gospel should then live, be taken care of through the benefits of the gospel going forth. And the Lord Jesus, he must have been referring the Apostle Paul to Luke 10, verse 7. And in the same house remained, this is speaking of sending out the 70, eating and drinking such things as they give, for the laborer is worthy of his hire. And then it goes on. But that is the principle that he taught. And so a very clear principle. So a couple of things. Let me just finish here. Again, it's a unique passage to go through. We see that there can be attitudes in churches that hinder. Now, isn't it interesting? He had no problem being supported by the church of Philippi. Why? Because the church of Philippi didn't have the issues that the church of Corinth had. But when carnality and pride gets in, then there can be great difficulties in what to do about these very touchy things. You know, probably the most sensitive issue in any situation and in a church also is money. How is money used? Money has to be appropriately handled and so forth. And so if things get out of whack and there's carnality rather than spirituality, guess what's going to be a problem? And evidently that happened to the Apostle Paul here. He was genuinely apostle and God worked. You see here a man that wasn't going to demand his rights. He was going to put the gospel first. And I think that's a tremendous example for all of us. And certainly for all of you going into the ministry, folks, it's about seeing the Lord work, not your rights. Don't expect anything. You've got to teach your people. You've got to lead properly, but you're never in it for the money and for the things that you think that you should receive. And never, never be thinking along that line. And then the other aspect here is, of course, that a church needs to be sensitive. The Lord said that this is the way it should be. And it should be the right kind of balance and should show respect to the Lord by doing what is right for those in leadership. All right. And I do appreciate your giving here, and I appreciate how our staff is being taken care of. Frankly, I'd like to see be able to do more and more. Anybody notice the inflation thing going on? You know, what do we do about that? You know, pastors can't say, hey, I want more money. I'm not asking for anything more. This is not me. Okay, everybody hear that? Forget it. I'm just saying, but we have to think about our staff. We have to think about those things. And I appreciate how our deacons talk about it. So probably once in every 30 years, you'd have a message on this. Okay, so you got to be here for this. Isn't that exciting? And I had to suffer through it. There are some times you just have to do it. But it is important, and I'm telling you, if you got to follow biblical principles. And this church is blessed because it has done right. And I want to thank you. Thank you for taking care of missionaries. Thank you for Faith Promise. Thank you for doing right by evangelists. I'm telling you, the offerings we have when evangelists come are off the charts. It is an absolute thrill. And your care for people and your wanting to meet needs. And many of you have sacrificed to try to help different of our folks that are connected with us here. So it's tremendous. And then how the great care that is taken care of here by for our staff, I just want to commend you for it. But this is a biblical principle, and it's more than just a good idea of how an organization should run. The Lord said it. And so therefore, that'll give you, I think, direction and comfort as you think about decisions that need to be made along that line.